to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jodi. How are you?
Sorry, Lainey. Want to do my hair for Zoom.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about your new haircut. How's the short hair?
I like it. And you know what I've noticed is like every 2 years I do this because I was looking at photos from like, you know, 2 years ago. I'm like, oh, I just get bored with the long hair and I chop it and I let it grow. So I like it. I don't know that it's easier or harder. I don't know that it's making that big a difference, honestly.
Yeah, it's like those initial moments you first feel really different and then it kind of all gets.
Yeah, I was really happy to get rid of like old hair and like old hair color.
Well, I'm excited to spend time with you today talking about our amazing guests coming up for this episode. Before we jump into Where Brains Meet Beauty podcast, let's talk a little bit about what's going on at the agency. We have been working on a couple different things, and recently we helped elevate medical-grade skincare brand Neocutis by turning complex science into scroll-stuffing social content.
Well, we love our professional skincare, right? We've worked with all the leading brands here, and as Sarah, our COO, would say, the brand that educates the consumer wins the consumer, right? So that's really what we take to all this work. And we know that searches for ingredient info, 229% year over year, right? This is just a trend that keeps growing. People really want to know what's in their skincare. So with Neocutis, we help them cut through the noise with credibility and clarity.
Yeah, we know the consumer wants this scientific information, so we have to find a way to deliver it to them in a way that makes sense. So blending science with strategy, mixing that clinical credibility with cultural relevance, our team brought ingredient benefits and real consumer struggles to the forefront of the storytelling.
Well, we are data-driven, as you know, and we can report a massive 358% increase in engagement and more than 100% lift in impressions and reach on Instagram alone. So we can see that the work works and we're really proud of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes beyond just these amazing stats that Jodi's sharing. We are building awareness and we're building trust with the consumer. So it's a really long-term effect. If you are in the skincare or wellness space, this is a masterclass in turning scrolls into sales, really smart, really story-driven content. So take a look. We will post it on LinkedIn.
Yes, we love posting our case studies on LinkedIn. I actually just got feedback from someone in my network saying we put just the right amount of content on LinkedIn. So I was like, thank you for noticing. We're really proud of that.
Yeah, Jodi always uses the word snackable, and I think it's so perfect for these case studies. Like you only have a few minutes you're scrolling through on a lunch break in between calls, so we try to keep our data really tight for everybody. Okay, Jodi, let's talk about it. Who do we have on the show today?
This was so fun. So we were with Caroline Chironi. She's Vice President TJC, and Sarah Foley, Managing Partner of Invenext Growth Partners. I met Sarah through one of our former guests, Debbie Perlman. They're both so knowledgeable on this theme of career capital, voices in finance and investing.
Mm-hmm. It was a really great episode. We really get into how childhood dreams evolved into impactful careers in private equity and investing, both in cutting edge beauty companies.
And you'll hear how both guests balance data-driven decision-making with the irreplaceable value of human connection, something they see as vital, even in a world increasingly shaped by AI.
Yeah, we talk a lot about day-to-day responsibilities, which is always really interesting to hear, you know, just all the different things that happen in people's work days. They're supporting growing brands, Caroline and Sarah, so you'll hear a lot of insights in leadership, creativity, and what really drives satisfaction in their careers.
And because we like to play games, we had a really lighthearted museum tour game where art and personality collide. So whether you're into finance, beauty, or just love a good career pivot story, this episode is packed with smart takeaways and relatable moments.
Let's hear more from Caroline Chironi and Sarah Foley in episode 292.
Hey, beauty founders, brand builders, and industry insiders. Are you ready to level up?
Our friends at Kosako are back for the 9th annual edition of Beauty Connect. It is happening November 3rd through the 5th at the gorgeous Fairmont Century Plaza in Los Angeles.
Beauty Connect is the industry's go-to problem-solving platform. Our COO, Sarah Lavallee, will be joining this year for Base Beauty.
You'll also be surrounded by some of your favorite brands, Supergoop, House Labs, L'Occitane, Nordstrom, Bloomingdale's, and Beekman 1802.
We're talking curated one-on-one meetings, a luxe gift bag, intimate closed-door dinners with retailers, investors, and your sharpest peers.
Head to beautyconnectla.com and use our code WBMB for 10% off your ticket.
Let us know if you'll be attending. Your next big break could be in that room. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. Today, we're diving into careers in finance. I'm here with Caroline Chironi, Vice President of TJC, which is formerly known as The Jordan Company, and Sarah Foley, Managing Partner, Invenext Growth Partners. Thank you, ladies, for being here.
Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for having us.
So this is a really exciting day for us here at Where Brains Meet Beauty because it's the first time we're focused on voices in finance and investing. And we've had incredible conversations all day long. This is our fourth recording of the day of six, but I have fueled myself with some sugar and hydrated myself. So we'll have a really fun conversation. So you know this is a career journey show, which is probably different than most interviews you've been on. And we're going to start at the beginning. It's this question I ask every single person who's on the show. We have amazing responses through the years. When you were a little kid, what career did you dream of having? We'll start with you, Sarah.
Okay. I wanted to be a veterinarian. And I think it was born from just, you know, that young love for animals, having pets growing up. But when I realized that there's a circle of life to the pets, I knew I wouldn't be able to handle having the harder task when they get to that point in their little lives. So I abandoned it. But I literally would be able to visualize the veterinary office. I had a design scheme for it and everything. I was just strangely focused on being a veterinarian.
Okay, what was like the theme? Like, what would the design look like?
It was multi-mix material. It had some stonework. It had some like shiplap type of exterior to it. It had a really big door, like a barn. I hadn't yet gotten to the inside on where how to design that part, but it was, I remember sitting down in the hallway upstairs in our house when we were supposed to be asleep, but the hall light was on, so I was able to design, draw, and then go to sleep dreaming about all of the animals I could take care of.
Okay, I want to come back to this. Okay, let's talk about your career dreams when you were a kid.
Yeah, so I think if you asked me when I was 10, it would probably change every day, but I love to write. I was writing a lot of fiction stories. I also loved to put on plays with friends and specifically choreograph dances in those plays. So again, it would change every day, but I think writing specifically and doing something with writing, whether that was writing for a magazine or more so journalism, definitely up that alley. And then for a while too, wanted to work in an art gallery. My mother was a professor of art history, so instilled kind of a love of art, going to museums and being lucky enough to do that when I was younger. So somewhere in the realm of the arts, creative and writing. And that's of course why I'm in finance today. Right.
Exactly. So we're going to look for themes in during the course of our discussion of, are you actually living out this dream? And maybe it's just like not surface level, the dream, like, you know, you are not a veterinarian. Yep. Are you using the same skills that one would need to have a successful career there? So I want to go back to this medical practice for pets, because we actually have so many people this afternoon on our show who are in the finance and M&A space and medical. So the four wall medical practices. And I wonder if your future is investing in these vet practice chains.
Well, pet overall is a category that we'll invest in at Invenext Growth Partners. We have one pet food business in the first fund's portfolio called Pet Plate.
What is Pet Plate?
Pet Plate is a subscription-based started pet food business for dogs made with human-grade quality food and then frozen and sent to you every month in portions that would be the right size for your weight of pet. They've since expanded, and they now have a dry line. They have some supplements. They have some treats, and they are found in some retailers as well. But again, the pet industry is a great one. We spend lots of money on those fur children, and we know that there are going to be great trends to continue to invest behind.
Here's a picture of my dog.
There
Kinchi.
You go.
And I have her on my phone and not my kids. Very interesting.
There you're proving our kind of thought and thesis around how important they are to the family. But we think about four-wall veterinary. We think about telehealth models that are also available and growing now.
Wait, there's vet telehealth?
There is vet telehealth. It's a means of, if you will, triage. So there are lots of things that you are asking your vet about that could be very quick to spot and diagnose. that don't necessarily need you to take time off from work, mm-hmm. drive to the veterinary's office, wait, because they typically get behind, have the visit, and then leave with a bag full of food, prescriptions, or whatever it may be. That telehealth channel, now that it's become more and more of a reality in a natural way of interacting with an expert, mm-hmm. medical expert, is something that more vets are adopting to, one, make pet care more accessible, mm-hmm. but to give you some time back so you can prioritize your day.
Has anyone in the room used telehealth for vet services? No?
I wish.
Is really interesting.
Yeah, it's coming.
Okay, so we can see this vet passion coming through in your day job now. Is the writing and art appreciation involved in your day-to-day?
Art appreciation from a de-stressing mechanism perspective, okay. for sure. Writing and I think creative thought also come into play mm-hmm. day-to-day
yes.
in investing, very much so. Creative thought can manifest itself in different ways, whether that's writing and then ultimately in investing.
So you both have similar day jobs, but your focus areas are completely different, right? So you're B2B,
yes.
right? And you're consumer.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about those parameters. Like Sarah, this fund is new, right?
So it's been around for about 7 years.
Oh, 7 years. That's, okay.
And we're raising the second fund now. But the goal is investing in what we call kind of breakout to breakthrough brands, otherwise defined as kind of seed stage to mm-hmm. Series B stage, also otherwise defined as a couple of million in annual revenue at that early stage and 25 million plus in revenue at the higher end. And the goal is to find, again, a kind of breakout brand with a product or a service that has real differentiation in a few different areas, I'm sure we'll talk more about too, but resonates with their targeted consumer. Beauty is a big category for us. I think we've got 5 investments in beauty, mm-hmm. and we've invested in a few other, you know, other categories within the consumer sphere as well. That is our focus on the earliest stage and in building the brand.
Okay, and then what is your area of focus?
Broadly, the area of focus for the firm, historically TJC, was focused on industrials companies, so companies primarily with manufacturing footprints. Mm-hmm. Over the last decade plus, the firm has grown to have more of breadth in terms of where we invest. So it's industrials, it's supply chain and logistics, consumer and healthcare, industrial technology, more aerospace and defense focused. I still spend time in industrials. And within industrials, it's one of the companies that I support on and specifically has a manufacturing footprint, but the end market is personal care.
I find this area really exciting and kind of sexy. I know that sounds surprising. We actually have a client, I won't name names yet, but they're a chemical manufacturer that discovered a molecule that does something amazing. Instead of just putting out in market in their normal, you know, chain of like selling it to brands to use in formulations, they decided we're going to build the brand, right? So this is actually, we get these calls a lot now. Businesses are deciding, well, let's take a bigger piece of mm-hmm. the pie mm-hmm. by incubating our own business. So I find that so exciting and exhilarating because they're true experts in what they do, making these, you know, magical ingredients,
yeah. Yeah.
But they don't know anything about marketing and brand building, which is why they're sure. incredible partners for us. And it's so, so, so fun. So do you see that on the horizon for your supplier type of brands?
Potentially, yes. And in a business that acts as a partner more so to connect brands and early stage brands to supply chain partners, mm-hmm. whether mm-hmm. that's contract manufacturers, whether that's consultants for how to get into retail, if mm-hmm. that's an avenue of growth for the brand. So we're seeing many more companies crop up that are partners, whether that's consultants or otherwise, mm-hmm. to earlier stage brands. So not necessarily kind of incubation, mm-hmm. but helping those brands on their growth trajectory,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
So let's talk about how you actually started in these careers. Because the more I learn about these careers, the more I'm thinking I should have done this. You know, like I went a completely different path and became marketing creative director.
But that's a special skill too.
Yes, but this is cool too. And you know, it's like follow the money. Like you're literally right there. So you know, what was your first job in this industry, or how did you even know this existed?
How did I know this existed? My first job was at Morgan Stanley. Mm-hmm. So I graduated from college and was lucky enough to get recruited to Morgan Stanley, where I started in the M&A department. And that was a lot of fun. We had a huge analyst class from all over the world, and a lot of us are still in touch. Some of them are still at Morgan Stanley, which is amazing. And through the experience in helping other companies buy or sell themselves, we worked with a lot of financial buyers. So this private equity type of business and these firms that have portfolios of companies, and they need help having somebody on the line, finding a process to put in place to sell that business to the right buyer. Now, that right is defined by both kind of fit and price, but that's what I would spend more and more of my time doing, is helping prepare the materials to understand that business, to go market it to the potential buyer universe. And I thought that sounded much harder. It just sounded like the next level of challenge in this kind of finance journey that I was on the very early stages of experiencing. So after a couple of more years, I ended up working more full-time in this buyout, buy-side, private equity part of the world. And for me, I just love being a voyeur of business models. And that's where I find and get the kind of creative energy around, is figuring out what makes all of these businesses tick, and almost equally important, the people who are running these businesses and leading these businesses to help them grow, build good products, provide great jobs, etc.
And Caroline, how did you start in this career?
I can relate a lot to exactly what Sarah just said. So I actually started at Barclays Investment Bank, also in a sell-side M&A group in New York. So not too far, in walking distance from Morgan Stanley in Times Square.
Exactly.
So good memories there. But exactly to Sarah's point, I think after spending about 3 years there, what I started to realize is it was a fantastic experience. Yeah. You get to see businesses, but only really at a certain point in their trajectory when they're preparing to be sold to another strategic, which is another corporation in that space, or another private equity firm. But you don't really see how the business got to where it is today, nor do you see what comes next after that transaction takes place. So similar to Sarah, I said, I'd like to be on the side of things where I can support a company in realizing its growth trajectory. So you see that 5-year plan, but as a banker, but you're not there for it. And does it actually get executed on? Generally, the answer is no. Certain things.
Yeah, your
kind
of job as the advisor ends when you close the deal.
Transactional.
It's very transactional, and then you have a fun kind of closing dinner party, and you're on to the next assignment. Whereas the new owner has to integrate it. That's when they really start to understand the business. They did a lot of diligence on.
Exactly.
But they're responsible for managing it and running it, and really supporting the management team that's executing day to day.
Right.
You mentioned, Sarah, people, and this comes up all day long so far in our conversations, that the investments are made in people. And we have, you know, a lot of technology in our lives right now, and we have technology making things easier for us, but it's still the humans that make the magic happen. But so in these conversations that you're having now, when you're looking to make investments, what does it look like when brands are like, well, we're AI this or we're AI that? Are they hiding behind it? You know, are you able to see like the true potential of the human beyond the tech?
Yeah.
We'll start with
it's
you, Sarah.
It's such a great, great question. In fact, I was talking with some other women earlier about this game-changing technology with these two letters, AI, that is going to be prevalent across all companies, industries, and our lives. I think in the business of building consumer brands, you are constantly thinking about that emotional connection that the consumer you're targeting has with the product. And that, I think, is going to be harder to replicate digitally, technologically. There's got to be kind of a reason to try, right? There's got to be a reason for it to be and exist. And AI solutions, I think, will be instrumental in these companies becoming more efficient in the way they scale. From a manufacturing point of view, that's they think about how they plan supply chain, the way they think about managing their inventory, the way they communicate with the retailers they're selling their products into, all the way to some creative elements of the business. But I really do believe humans understand other humans best and the way in which we believe really great, sustainable, with longevity brands will be created is to make sure that those humans are involved from the very beginning and are leading the kind of charge at these companies, both culturally and around the business execution that happens and evolves, right? Mm-hmm. Every kind of year, every day, actually. But I think that the human touch is going to be instrumental, and we'll keep it.
So Caroline, in your space, when you're having conversations with the businesses you invest in, how do they put the human first, and when is the human first? Because in manufacturing, I imagine like the technology is supremely awesome and very helpful, right, for efficiencies.
Yeah, when I back up a bit and think about beauty as a category, it's very subjective, right? Mm-hmm. You think about the word beauty versus if you're in an industry like tech or software, maybe the answer is a bit different, but it's based on consumer preferences, lifestyle, mm-hmm. discretionary spending. So to Sarah's point, I think the human element and understanding your customer, whether that's a brand or an end consumer, there's no replacement for that. Now, when I think through R&D and innovation, maybe there are certain elements of that process and manufacturing as well that can be made more efficient utilizing AI, exactly to your point, Sarah. But I think those conversations with the customer, understanding trends and preferences, and the conversations that then get you to a more advanced stage of R&D won't be replaced. Mm-hmm. And there's a human element in that between, you know, the head of R&D and other people on the R&D team speaking directly with the point person at that brand. There, you can't substitute that. So that's just my two cents.
So at Base Beauty, we talk about a people plus tech approach. Like, our humans are very important and the tech helps us, right?
Yeah.
But I just had an idea as you were both talking, because we're now in the space where we're helping our clients advance their marketing with AI in mind. So a good example of this is the product detail pages for, you know, on a D2C or on Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. Are those pages, is the content built for AI, right? Because that's where people are doing their searches now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is an overhaul we're doing for clients. So if anyone's listening, hire us for that.
That's a great idea.
Okay. So now I want to take this a next step based on what you just said. Are we going to get to the point where, let's say Amazon, for example, has learned so much about me because it's listening to me and my kids in the kitchen that it's just auto shipping me products auto gets sold to me based with the benefits of AI understanding who we are, that actually we're going to lose some of these human components in between? Because right now we're like on social and we're learning about brands, but now we have AI tools talking to real human consumers. Mm-hmm. Are they going to start talking to my Amazon to make preferences for me to ship things that I never even ordered, but, you know, have a delightful purpose in my life because it knows me so well? Like,
I fully believe so. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, I don't know exactly the path it will take, and it will be windy.
It
won't be a straight line. But, I mean, they're already doing that to a degree with Alexa, and you can ask Alexa to order you something instead of just inferring what are you running low on. I think smart homes, you know, are continuing to evolve, and the technology around your home that will make your life a little easier they're still evolving. They're still coming. And I think there's going to be good that comes from that because it frees up your time to spend it on the higher, more valuable areas.
Right.
But, you know, if I had Amazon at the moment send me a bunch of things that I don't want, there better be a solution for sending them all back that is also very seamless and frictionless to me. Because I don't need the extra noise in my life.
Right. But I think there's a world where, like, I subscribe to give me my household essentials and you figure out which are the best ones because I want clean beauty products. I want clean household, you know, laundry detergent, whatever. And 10% of my shipments are surprise and delight. We want our clients to be to the top of the list of the surprise and delight,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So I kind of feel like that might be really soon.
Oh, I think so. I agree with you. I want to make sure you get your perspective too, but I think that is coming and quickly. Mm-hmm. I agree.
No, I think that's entirely fair. And when I think about also R&D and innovation in that process, there's probably a way that that can be automated as well. So just like Amazon may send you things to your doorstep based on your preferences or your order patterns, there may also be recommendations to brands based on their current product lines, based on products that they've developed previously, or consumer feedback on their brand websites, for example. So there may be a way to use AI to say, hey, contract manufacturer X, this brand may want this type of product in the future. So why not start pitching that to them? So there are many ways that you can use technology, I think, to have more effective and useful conversations with customers. But there's also a human element that needs to triage what the AI comes out with and vet it, if you will.
Yeah.
I think it's also going to be fascinating to watch how the fan engagement process evolves around a brand, because I still believe and enjoy the experience of shopping in person to see what's on the shelf. What is my eye not recognizing? What might I mean, it takes us...
Touch it.
Yeah, it takes us 3 hours to get through any kind of store because we're so interested in what's going on the shelf. But I do think this smart home, more efficient use of time, preferences, all building into what that platform of Amazon specifically has ahead of it is massive. It's going to be really interesting. It could be really fun. It also leads to them having all of that data to source where they innovate and evolve on the product side too. Which is fine. I mean, that's the way I think our business and consumer also kind of grows, is different price points and the value kind of value spectrum and continuum that that any individual wants to use as they're sorting through the type of product they want to buy.
So let's switch gears. Caroline, what is an actual work day like for you? Like, what are you doing with your time? Where is your focus? Paint a picture for us.
That certainly changes day to day and sometimes even hour to hour. But big picture, so I work on the investing side at TJC. I'm a VP on the team. I started at the firm right after the tenure at Barclays.
Oh, good, good.
So have been at TJC since 2019. And big picture, my responsibilities are split between support for existing portfolio investments and due diligence and evaluation of prospective new platform investments for the firm. So sometimes that split is 20-80 in terms of portfolio support and new deal work, and other times it's the exact inverse. So it's everything from supporting our existing portfolio companies in looking at add-on acquisitions, so companies that could make sense to acquire from their perspective for a number of reasons. Maybe it's an adjacent product category. Maybe it's a geography they've been looking to get into. Maybe it has a capability from a technology standpoint. So I would help that company in evaluating and doing due diligence and effectuating that transaction ultimately. And then on the new deal side, it's due diligence of an industry, of the company itself, of its financial profile and standing, and of course a number of other subject areas in understanding that business, the industry it operates in, and ultimately saying yes or no to doing the deal.
So does that mean your day is like nose and research, or is it on the phone meeting with people, schmoozing?
Well, as Sarah touched on earlier, it's a very people-centric business. So if it's looking at a potential new deal, the day may be a multi-hour management due diligence session.
A marathon,
yeah. Exactly. So in a room with a management team, the executives of that company, and our team at TJC, any advisors we have to support our work, and asking many questions to that company, but hopefully having more of a dialogue at that point too, in terms of how we can help them execute on their growth strategy and looking forward into when we're potentially partnered together, what that could look like in areas where we TJC could also support as a firm. So that may be a day with looking at a potential new deal. And then there are other days where I'm torn in many different directions across the portfolio too, but it's busy, it's good, but it can take on many, many different forms in terms of research, time with management teams, and otherwise.
And Sarah, is your day look the same or is it different?
Similar. I would say there are four buckets and the level in that.
I love a listicle.
The level in that bucket varies very widely. The first bucket would be fund or firm management. So that would consist of LP communication and audits and tax filings and people and so on, platform tools that we're using. The next would be pipeline development, which is our version of sourcing for new opportunity to invest in, meeting brands, doing research proactively, also managing the inbox of the kind of approach for people coming to us for capital as they're out raising. That's a lot of fun. It's probably the most fun bucket because I get that to scratch the itch of that business model voyeurism part. So, and I love meeting brands. I love meeting those management teams to understand why they did and chose to do what they're doing. The third would be raising capital for the next fund. And that's something that, quite frankly, should be happening all of the time, whether you're actively in market or not. You're really out there just developing more relationships because it's very much a people business.
So does that mean like lunches, dinners,
you bet,
like meetups?
Calls, stuff? Zooms, in-persons, prospecting ourselves, just like our brands do as they're looking for who are the next set of investors that are, you know, likely to be a good fit for this particular round. We're looking for those types of investors that like our strategy and would be interested in being a part of the next fund. And then the last bucket is portfolio management, and that is working through whatever is happening in the portfolio, you know, probably now 15 active companies, but they are in various stages of capital raising, business model execution, maybe preparing to sell themselves, maybe preparing for some other, you know, significantly larger capital raise, or maybe dealing with a big challenge or four. And so we really want to be a partner to our portfolio. I mean, it's not an unusual sentiment whatsoever, but I want that call when things are really hitting the fan. And I don't want to hear later how they were nervous about how to handle something. I would rather help them brainstorm solutions right as it's happening, and want to them to feel comfortable doing so.
So that leads me into my next question. So thank you for teeing it up. Like, how much influence do you guys get to have over these businesses you're investing in? Like, do you just get to say your expertise and hope they make a good decision? Or are you like, you're doing this? Like, tell me what that, we can start with you, but tell me what that looks like.
I think it's a fine balance between giving management teams the autonomy they need to run a business. And oftentimes the teams that we invest in have decades of experience in an industry. So my background, our background is not going to supplant decades of operating in a specific niche within an industry. So you need to toe the line of, I think Sarah hit on it really well, being a thought partner to management teams and a resource to provide feedback to them in terms of whatever problem they may have, but not walk all over them either and not say this is how it should be and this is the only thing that's right. Now, there are situations where you may want them to take your suggestion a little bit more than other times. You know, certainly areas where maybe you have a credit situation or a leverage situation
or a leadership problem
or a leadership problem that's affecting culture and execution, then you and the board have to step in and make an executive decision when it's affecting more broadly the company as a whole in terms of how it operates and how people feel comfortable in the workplace too. So
Sarah, is it the same for you? What I'm hearing is Caroline with her team, it's almost like being the parent of a young adult. You're making recommendations and sharing wisdom, but you can't make them do it.
Right.
Is that how you see it for your business?
Not quite.
So you can be the parent of a toddler.
More of the toddler phase. Uh-huh. Exactly.
You're taking a nap now?
Yeah, they're just younger. Now, I think
later stage and earlier stage, there is a big difference.
That stage point you're making is a significant one, because it translates in my business to when we invest in a company or the group of investors close a round of funding in a company, we end up owning 15 to 20-ish percent, mm-hmm. which means we have some kind of, we call them protective provisions in the investment documents. It's kind of, they can only spend perhaps, you know, $1 million on CapEx without needing board approval. But it doesn't come with the more control when you own more over 50% of a business, features that are more prevalent,
which is in how it Caroline's is for business us across our investments,
where they call it the hiring firing kind of decisions are also made. So we don't necessarily in my business have the control, given our ownership level, to say the CEO's got to go. What we really have to rely on is building a relationship with the company and demonstrating how our experience, our expertise, as well as other portfolio case studies, examples, lead to some value that we can add to the company. So it's very relationship driven.
You're the parent of a young teen who's starting to go out into the world.
I would say toddler to adult, like tweener. Tweener. It's they're young, right? They still need, as we call it, more care and kind of feeding than more mature businesses that have a better profitability probably picture. They're just profitable and they're sustainable in that way versus our section, our area of investing, especially in the seed and A stage. These companies don't make money yet. So they are relying on investors to come fund them in the next round to get them to profitability, where they'll have so much more in advocacy over their future. But they need more volume and they need some capital to get there.
So one last question before we move into the game phase of our show. Let's talk about like what makes you the most happy and excited in these careers. Like for me, it's watching my team do cool things. They're out at building amazing events and experiences and photo shoots and content and campaigns. And like when I see this all happen, it like makes me giddy and I get, you know, so proud. So we'll start with you, Caroline. Like what is that most fun moment in your workday?
Yeah, maybe I'd split it up in terms of looking at the success of the portfolio investments, but also looking at our success as a firm internally too. So to the first point, I think seeing a business execute on an organic growth strategy, on a growth strategy via acquisitions where we are involved in almost every aspect of effectuating that acquisition, of seeing through the integration alongside the portfolio company. I think that's number one, just seeing the company succeed. And again, as we talked about earlier, this is a very people-centric business. And at the end of the day, we're investing in a team and we want that management team to be the same team at the end of the day when we're about to exit that we invest in. So to me, it's seeing a team work hard, us work hard and support them in their growth story, and then seeing that come to fruition. And there are always bumps along the road, not to sugarcoat it at all. And then when I look internally in terms of how we're doing as a firm at TJC, I think for a long time, I was really focused on investing in myself, especially in the earlier stages of my career at Barclays, as we talked about earlier. But I think it's really important to invest in the success of those around you too. Like when I look at my peers, the associates that I work with on deals, on portfolio situations, it's really important to put yourself in their shoes and say, well, what did I know at that point? And who kind of helped me with this certain problem when I was in that situation? So it's about sort of paying it back to those who are not too far away from where you were a few years ago, but it matters a lot in terms of their personal growth, your growth, and more broadly, the growth of the firm.
And Sarah, where is that fun and sparkle in your workday?
That's so important, what you were just saying. It's just critical to everybody doing well and achieving together. My sparkle, I would say, comes from similarly kind of portfolio observation as well as firm and culture. I love getting into a retail store and seeing my products and the portfolio on the shelf.
Like the babies. Cool.
It's so fun. It is amazing. And then, like, I would say second order of fun there is when others, friends, family, and new folks recognize brands in the portfolio. Mm-hmm. It's great, right? Mm-hmm. It's so much fun. Firm-wise, culture-wise, there are two things. One, I love attracting talent to the firm. Mm-hmm. You know, young, senior, and everything in between, they want to work with us because of the hard work we've put in, like you, developing our personality and reputation mm-hmm. in the market. And then secondly, I love the brands that are searching for us and seeking us out specifically, not just because we're one of the kind of few, it seems, at the moment that are investing directly in brands, but because of our portfolio, our founders' referrals of what it's like to work with us. That makes me very happy and is very rewarding.
You mentioned seeing the products on the shelf and that your network, family, friends recognize the brands. Mm-hmm. I totally have the same feeling. We do so much work in beauty, wellness, personal care. Some of these brands are more obscure. They're like very highly specialized, right? And we do amazing, highly specialized work, let's say in aesthetics and things like that. But when we have a Toms of Maine where like you're just plucking it off the shelf and everybody's seen it, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like now everybody in my family knows, you know, this is a brand that we work on. And it's a really fun feeling.
It's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really great.
So let's transition into our game. It's a museum tour. You both mentioned that, as we know, you wanted to be maybe in the art world. You both love exploring art and art history in the city. So we're going to do a museum tour, this or that, where you'll tell us what you want to spend your time doing. So I'll give you a few options, some exhibits happening this year, and you'll let us know which one you're going to go see. Okay. So here we have the Met versus MoMA, the Masters of Modern Art. Your options are to see Van Gogh's New York at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in October. It's an exclusive exhibit exploring Van Gogh's relationship with New York. Oh, that's cool. Or the other option is the Modern Visionary, the Art of Andy Warhol at MoMA in September. It's a deep dive into Warhol's life, work, and impact on New York. We'll start with you, Sarah. Which show are you going to go see?
Warhol.
Okay,
tell me why. I think only because I'm much more of a modern contemporary culture fan.
Okay, Caroline?
I like that both have an emphasis on New York.
Yes, cool.
I'd probably go see both, but I'll leave with Van Gogh.
Okay. In Pittsburgh, there's a great Warhol museum.
Is that right?
Yeah, because that's where he's from. It's really good. Okay, the second scenario is the Guggenheim versus the Whitney, the contemporary scene. Your options are Abstract Futures, a look at contemporary sculpture at the Guggenheim. It's in November. It's a breathtaking exhibit showcasing contemporary abstract sculpture from emerging artists around the globe. Or you can go to the American Icons, Contemporary American Art at the Whitney. It's a sweeping overview of the best contemporary American artists from painting to installation and multimedia works. Sarah, where are you heading?
Boy, that's tough. Mm-hmm. I think I'll choose the sculpture experience because I like to spend my time in that one kind of medium, which is whatever type of medium they're using for their sculptures, but in a lot of different type of sculpture work.
Caroline?
I'm intrigued by the broad overview at the Whitney.
Okay.
So you do that
I'd
one.
Try that one out. Yeah.
I am a girl that, like, if there's a sculpture garden in any random city I'm in, I am there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. there's something about, like, the magnitude, like, the scale of a lot of these things, especially, like, the public art style of sculpture that's, like, astounding to me and the messages behind them.
It feels really like you can You really can experience.
You're
part of it. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
I love that feeling of, oh, this city, this town, like invests in this. Like, this is important. It makes me happy. Okay, next scenario, it's the New Museum versus the Frick, A Tale of Old and New. Radical Visions, Emerging Artists of New York, is at the New Museum in August. It's a look at cutting-edge experimental art being created by today's most exciting young artists in New York. Or the Masters of the Old World, European Paintings at the Frick in September. It's a more traditional yet beautiful collection exploring classic European paintings and their significance in the context of New York's art history. All these New York themes. Okay, Caroline, we'll start with you. Where are you going?
I'll go with the Frick. Number one, the subject matter is personally interesting to me with European roots. And number two, I haven't been to the Frick since it's been renovated. Mm-hmm. So anxious to see that.
Sarah?
I'm going to choose the same. While I'm a fan of the old masters, I'm more interested in a little Gilded Age moment touring the Frick. Mm-hmm. And I would love that. It'd be fun.
Okay, last one. Let's do, oh, I have a few to choose from. Let's do Cooper Hewitt versus Rubin Museum Design and Culture. So option one is designing the future, modern interiors and architecture at the Cooper Hewitt. It's a look at cutting-edge interior design and architecture with works from emerging designers and major firms shaping the future of New York. Or Tibetan art, mysticism, and masterpieces at the Rubin in September explore the spiritual and artistic legacy of Tibetan culture through this rich and captivating collection. Caroline, where are you heading?
Choose the Cooper Hewitt. I'm interested in kind of the blend of architecture, modern architecture, and the like. And I've actually never been there, too. So that would be a new one for me.
Right. Your next visit to New York.
That's yes, right.
Exactly.
Cooper Hewitt all the way, because to bring it full circle, I could get more design tips for my veterinary practice. But that's, I just great, love interior design and architecture, yeah, elements. I have a lot of photography that is very architecturally oriented. So that is exactly where I'd spend my time.
Thank you for doing my work for me to close it all out in a bow. This is such an amazing episode. Thank you. And thank you, everyone in the audience.
Thank
too,
you, no, so thank much you, for having us. Thank you, Natasha. You.
This was a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.